Ah, where were we? So, hello, Roy. Last time we spoke on a podcast, I think it was your birthday, back in June.
Hello, Stu. It was back in June, yeah. And that's you going straight into wanting me to say happy birthday to you, isn't it? Because we sit here today on your actual birthday.
Ah, yeah. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Yeah, that's enough of that. It's so strange how these things have worked
Wonder,
out, isn't
quite
it?
Literally.
So, yes, we just popped back into your feed to bring you some audio from Radio Days Asia, which was happening this week.
Indeed, yeah. Our roving reporter, James Ross, has been out and about and decided, quite nice of him, to send us some audio. So we've got some interviews coming up, but we thought we'd just have a rant before that.
A rant? It's a chat.
Well, okay, a chat. I noticed the title of our previous podcast was "Is Zoe Ball Going to Bower?" So I do hope by the time this goes out, you've just called this episode "Yes," because she's been bagged by Bower, obviously.
Yes, and starts on Monday in the afternoon.
Sponsored by?
Oh, I don't know. Who's she sponsored by?
BT.
Oh, is that still a thing? Are people buying phone lines still? I don't know.
They are, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so we were talking about where Zoe Ball was going to fit into the schedule. She's going to go on afternoons. And coincidentally, Trevor Nelson is back on afternoons this week as well. It's almost like they planned that. But I know he's not been very well. So, it's good to see him back on the radio. He's just part-time for a few weeks. But great to have Trevor back. He was a really nice guy when we chatted to him at the Arias, which seems like eons ago now.
Probably still is a nice guy as well. He wasn't just nice when we spoke to him. He's probably still quite nice.
I've missed you.
I noticed your prep for this podcast has been to ask AI what the biggest stories of the summer were in the radio industry.
Yeah.
Whereas I actually wrote out text with my hands.
Well, you've been writing these stories. You know what's been going on. I, just dip in now and then. I see the odd tweet. I go, oh, that's interesting. So I needed a reminder. But ChatGPT was very helpful.
Yeah, so let's just skip over them. Commercial radio hits high. Commercial radio's over 40 million weekly listeners now, which is significant because the BBC went to under 30 million in the last radio. So commercial radio is absolutely on fire. And it's probably relative because commercial radio has about 2,000 radio stations now with all the spin-offs from Global and Bower. And the BBC has managed to do about 3 spin-offs with all the legislation. So, you know, it is what it is in that regard. But yeah, commercial radio did quite well in radio.
And people like Zoe Ball going to commercial radio from the BBC is obviously going to probably only extend that, plus all the cuts that we've seen. That was another big announcement this summer, BBC announcing more job reductions, more savings. The World Tonight is going to go, changes across Radio 4 and 5 Live, amongst other places as well. So I think we're going to see probably even more of that shift to commercial radio if there's more big names going over as well.
Seems to be the way. Talking of BBC Radio, Radio 1 presenter shake-up, lots going on there. Ricky, Melvin, Dean, lots of names from Radio 1, which most of our listeners will complain they've never heard of. But quite big names leaving Radio 1. And new talent like Danny and Rosie.
Yeah, Milo and Rosie, well done to them. Great to see them finally getting a permanent, proper gig at Radio 1. I know Alan's been a big fan of theirs for a while, so that's great.
It really is amazing. Radio 4 Long Wave closes down. That's happened as well since we last spoke to you.
I'd not even noticed. I can't remember the last time I listened to Radio 4 Long Wave.
Well, that's probably why they closed it down. Scott Mills still in the news, of course. He hasn't said anything publicly since he left Radio 2, but he's been revealed as the highest paid on-air presenter in a particular 12-month period, which was probably a year ago, something like that.
And we talked about Scott Mills on the last time we did a little podcast and about how his Scott Mills bridge had disappeared. But it's been replaced by a radio presenter landmark in the Jordan North Terminal at Gatwick.
The Jordan North Terminal. I did want to Google and find out if there is a terminal in Jordan and they have a north version of the terminal in Jordan, because people landing in London or near London and they see Jordan, welcome to Jordan North, they'll think, huh? Are we in the Middle East?
Somebody holding up a sign, it's taxi, welcome to Jordan North.
They're doing really good stuff at Global. Respect to them for that. That's really, really good stuff.
Really
love it when they
stuff
do stuff like
really
that.
Good stuff.
And they've opened a nice new reception area as well, which looks amazing.
Have you been?
Not yet.
Still waiting for an invite.
I have been invited, but just not yet. They have to prep it for me, obviously. and then I can go. Maybe we can go when we're at the upcoming London events.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're going to the Audio Academy Festival. I'm getting used to saying that, Audio Academy Festival.
I'm not. It's the Radio Academy Festival. There's also Radio Centre Tuning In, which is the day before. So this is September 30th and October the 1st. We'll be in that London. Come and see us. The IBC event is taking place next week as we record as well, which I'll be heading over to in Amsterdam. And also IMRO, the IMRO Radio Awards are taking place in Ireland in October as well. So I'll be going there. So hopefully I'll get bits of audio for our next podcast as well as audio from the Radio Academy Festival. Event.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing you. And talking of, if we get into look at that new global reception, that'd be great. But talking of radio buildings, they're still a thing, it seems. Clyde has just moved to a new one as well in Glasgow. They had a bit of a fanfare on air and moved over during a live show, which I think Forth did as well a couple of years back, didn't they?
Yeah, you've got to ask yourself whether the listeners actually care about that, but maybe with big stations like Clyde where everybody knows where they are because they've been there for 50 years, maybe it's worth making a fuss about, but generally I wouldn't be such a fan of that. But it seemed to have gone down well. Other things happening, people are becoming train drivers.
This has happened for a while. We've had a bit of a WhatsApp chat about this, haven't we, with a few people. But there's a lot of people from radio go end up working in the rail industry. So many high profile presenter names who've done it over the years, and I think there's a kind of synergy there, isn't there? The anorak nature of the train industry and the radio industry, there's something about it.
Well, there's so many things that are similar, aren't there, in the radio industry and the train industries. It's multi-platform.
Yeah,
you've got lots of red lights, signals, what else did we come up with?
Stations.
Of course, lots of stations. Carriages, that kind of thing. Yeah, so there's lots of similarities. Obviously, the only reason people are going from radio to railways is because of those similarities, but yeah. Oh, Radio Caroline, they got into a bit of trouble as well.
Oh, that was the King thing.
Yes, so they said the King was dead a few months ago, and Ofcom, somebody must have complained about it, and Ofcom said, yes, you're right, it was bad. And they put them in breach of their licence. But it's probably the best publicity Radio Caroline's had for a long time, I would argue.
As the old mantra goes, all publicity is good publicity. There was a lot of people going, oh, didn't realise Radio Caroline was still a thing.
I know. So hopefully they've got a few more listeners out of that. And back up in Liverpool, the Radio City sign, which still dominates the skyline of Liverpool, is actually coming down, or the planning permission's in or been approved for the Radio City sign to disappear, which is bad news for Bauer. I don't know, is it bad news because Radio City doesn't exist anymore? So no. It's kind of advertising something that doesn't exist.
Right, well, we're going to get on with the rest of the podcast in a minute. We're going to have another podcast for you soon, hopefully, because I was out for a pint with a national radio broadcaster the other week, and he has agreed to come on the podcast.
That should be good.
Yeah, so we'll reveal who that is and talk to them in the coming weeks, hopefully. We just need to sort out a date.
Wait a minute. I just need to delve into the Radio Today mailbag and read out all of the letters that have arrived since our last podcast together. Okay. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. Oh. Oh, there's nothing there. It's okay. Carry on.
Is it just a demand for money from Ofcom again?
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Right, stick around. You are going to hear some brilliant people on this podcast. Coming up, Peter Neagle, Clive Dickens, James Cridland, and more, all at Radio Days Asia with our roving reporter, James Ross.
Thanks, Stu and Roy. Good to have you back. Well, I'm joined here at Radio Days Asia in Jakarta by someone who's quite familiar to those of you who go to Radio Days Europe. He is the managing director of Radio Days. He is Peter Neagle. Peter, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm very well.
It's been a great couple of days here in Jakarta. Always a different experience, Radio Days Asia versus Radio Days Europe. What's come out of it for you?
It's always really good to get a sense and understanding of the differences in the audio industry in different regions. As you said so nicely, we're represented here in Asia with Radio Days Asia, we're in Radio Days Europe, and we're also in Radio Days North America. Over here, it's very much the digital innovation, which is really going fast with the move onto visual platforms, the social media platforms, AI. There's not such a lot of anxiety towards AI over here. So it's really interesting to compare and to discuss with our colleagues in the nation the differences between US, Europe and Asia.
Does radio have a future in this part of the world, do you feel? You know, when you look around the world, you have so many different experiences of it.
It's true. We've seen a lot of data here about radio's decline. Some are holding at 10% of total listening time with other mediums. In Europe, it's like 70 or 80% most likely. So there is something going on here that is different. We've seen a lot of our colleagues here are trying digital alternative, different digital ways. But on the other hand, we also see this belief in the medium, and we hear that the core audience is still there and they still need them for news, for companionship, and for that relevance and trustworthiness that radio represents so well.
Can the UK, Europe learn much from what goes on here?
I think so. I saw a wonderful session on fact-checking and verifying. And we could learn a lot from, among other things, the speaker from Taiwan and the fact-checking center there in Taipei. There was one from Thailand, also very good. So fact-checking and verifying is areas that I don't think we fully grasp the importance of and the need to grow in Europe. So that's one thing, at least, I think we can learn from them. Also, this because they are so digital, rapid changes here, I believe we can learn from them and the first experience that they're doing with visual audio, with using AI. There's a lot of knowledge there we can learn from.
Now, you just announced that Radio Days Asia will be in Taipei this time next year. And, of course, Radio Days Europe will be in Palma, in Mallorca. What can we expect from that next March?
Taipei is a little too soon. We will begin building the program now. For the next one in our series is the one in Palma de Mallorca in Spain. We have begun putting the program together. We are beginning to announce speakers, I think, next week. And I will wait to announce some of them, but there are some really big names already in the mix, so that should be interesting. The focus there is very much the changing nature of audio in all its facets. We are also digging deep into research. We're digging deeper into community building, which is a big trend, we think. Visual audio is going to get its own summit the whole of Sunday. I think those are the things. And then the usual things like monetization. We got a morning show boot camp, programming, podcasting. So all the useful stuff will be there. But there are a few areas, of course, that we've been asked by partners and delegates to dive into. And I think those I just mentioned are the big ones.
And Mallorca, a fantastic place to be doing the event.
It is. It is. I don't think there'll be a lot of shenanigans going on because we'll be too fully engrossed
of
and
course.
Enjoying the program. But it is a nice place. Yes, it is. And there's a wonderful industry there. There are things we need to address in that market as well. For instance, something I thought was extinct 200 years ago, but piracy lives very well. Radio piracy.
Really?
Hijacking towers, sending out FM signals where they're not allowed to. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of, in the Balearic Islands, there's a lot of regional culture that we need to focus on and everybody can learn from, because they've been really good at diversifying and building that market. They're really strong local market. You wouldn't believe how strong it is. So there's a lot of things there to learn from other regional or local stations.
Well, Radio Days always seems to be at the forefront of what's happening in the audio industry right across the spectrum, and Mallorca sounds like a fantastic event.
Well, we have good advisors, you among others, to help us build those programs. So, thank you very much.
Well, with me now is someone else who has spent a huge amount of time in the radio business over the years, most recently in Australia, but a great career in the UK as well.
Clive Dickens is here. Clive, nice to see you here at Radio Days Asia in Jakarta.
Great to see you, James. Thanks for inviting me.
You're now managing partner for the Meliora company, which, as I can understand, is focused on particularly the power of AI. How would you put what you're doing? How can you explain that? It seems quite complicated at the moment.
Well, I had a long and enjoyable career in technology and music and radio, and if I reflect on that, it was the combination of what I call art and science that really inspired me. You know, the art was around the stories and the music and how radio made people feel. And the science was around the distribution, whether it was in the 80s around hard disk playout of commercials and music and databases and music scheduling. And in the 90s, it was the internet and streaming and streaming audio and streaming video. And then moving into television and then coming into my own advisory business again in 2025, this rate of technological change around AI was too good an opportunity. It was like, this is by far the most interesting, exciting and disruptive technology of any point in my career, and I couldn't sit on the sidelines and watch it without getting involved and then apply that to the industries that I love. And it's really that art and science. Art is the stories, the humans, how it makes you feel, and the science is the technology, the distribution, and the ones and zeros. And I've sort of learned over the years that I'm at best when I'm in the intersection between the two.
Nevertheless, for a lot of people, AI is quite a complex thing. Not quite sure, is it something that can help us in the short term? Is it something that can help us in the long term? And of course, it's ever-changing as well. So just staying on top of what it's capable of doing now, particularly in our industry, is tough.
Yeah, I mean, I made my first investment in an AI company just under 10 years ago. I can quite honestly say I had no idea what AI was 10 years ago. But I backed a really talented former colleague of mine from Golden Square, a founder called Vince Lynch and a CTO called John Martin. And I didn't really know what they were looking to create with a company called Ivy.ai 10 years ago. But I knew them. You know, Vince was the most creative person I'd worked with in my recent career, and John was the most genius technical person that I'd met in my recent career. So when they said to me, we're going to move to Los Angeles and start a company around machine learning and AI, I really was backing them. And that's turned out to be a very successful business and a fruitful relationship. And therefore, what you do in your career, and I'm in my late 50s, and you typically, when you think about when you're learning as a young person or as a student or through life, continual life learning is incredibly important. And you learn faster if you're really interested in something, and you always did when you were at school or college, university. And you also learn faster if you are willing to unlearn things. And I sort of taught myself to unlearn things because there are things that are no longer true that you learned before. And that's really at the center of transformation. So actually, first of all, it was about really immersing myself in AI about 10 years ago and reading about it, experimenting about it, understanding everything from frontier models and large language models and tokenization inference, and learning from people who are subject matter experts in their field, people who are much smarter and much younger than me. And then also freeing up the capacity to learn by actually unlearning some of the things that were very important at the time. And our industry has to unlearn lots of things. And we've got to unlearn some of the traditional software we use for music scheduling. We've got to unlearn the need for air-conditioned floating sound box boxes. We've got to unlearn the need for high transmission towers. Sorry about that, Roy. And you've got to unlearn the need for, you know, some of the prem-based technology that we all use to, you know, to get where our careers and produce our content. And actually, although it is complex, if you are commonly thinking about solving a problem and you surround yourself with much smarter people than yourself, it's amazing how the clouds clear and it can become all of a sudden less complex.
So as you look forward, because obviously AI is about the future, I mean, where do you see it in, say, a year's time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time? How directly is it going to affect our industry, you know, the audio industry as a wide thing?
Well, I think one of the hardest things for humans to do is to predict the future. So you have to be very careful when you're trying to do that. I've not seen many people be able to do that in history. But you just look at the fundamentals of where we are at the moment. We're basically just 4 to 5 years on from the first frontier models, and now we have 1.5 billion people on the planet now using AI on a weekly basis. 65% of the US population claim they're using AI every week, and 17% using it every single day, and 9% using it every single hour. Wow. But that's still less than 20% of the connected active smartphone users in the world. So there's still an 80% upside of people who can, one click away from installing Claude or Lovable or Gemini or ChatGPT on their phone and realizing how it can change their lives, how they can access information, how they can create products, sell things, learn things, and connect with people. And so the potential for growth, for efficiency and disruption is enormous, and therefore your question was, how do we apply it to the telco, media and technology industry? Well, we like to apply it through an optimistic lens. One of our values at Meliora is relentless optimism, and anyone that knows me would definitely say that's something that I've tried to live my career by. And so you decide. People say to me, I think AI is bad, it uses too much electricity, or the data centers are too noisy, or it's not respecting copyright, or it's not doing this. And I said, we'll do something about it. You know, it's then actually build better AI, use better tools, start to change the large language model you use. Pick a Pertus from Switzerland as an open weight, open source, fair powered model. Don't use ChatGPT. Pick a Mistral from France, which is the EU's leading model. Go and use the much more cost effective Sarvan from India. You have options, you have agency, and I don't like people just saying, oh, what's it going to do, disrupt? I think, you know, you learn that everything in and around us on Earth is built by humans, and in a physical form, buildings, you know, incredible architecture, creativity, and we are the humans who are living through this period, and I don't think successive humans will thank us if we mess it all up by just saying, oh, it's all going to end in shit. So I'm a relentless optimist, but I'm also somebody who actually goes out and says, well, let's do something about this. So I'm determined to show to our industry that AI can be a force for good, a force for growth, and a force for optimism.
So will radio still exist in 5 years as it is, do you think?
Oh, no, video didn't kill the radio star. James. And the 100 years, and in the next 100 years, I think, what is radio? It's at the center of human connection, shared experience. But right, distill it right down, it's about stories. And storytelling is at the heart of human communication. Has been, for instance, some of the oldest humans on Earth, which existed in First Nation Australia, you know, tens of thousands of years ago. So on the basis that humans exist and stories are important, then radio will continue to have a role.
You have had a great career over the last however many years it is. You know, whether it's Capital or Absolute or Jack FM or many different things that you've done. I have two questions for you. How did you first get into radio? And what's your favorite moment from your career? You know, what was the bit you loved so much?
Had a career. I'm hoping I'm still having a career and still learning every day. I'm not done yet, James. I've got plenty more years ahead of me. Look, it's not a story that I tell very often, but my first ever love of radio was when I was at school in St Albans in Hertfordshire in England. And I was a very bad chorister in the school choir, but I got picked to go and work at a broadcasting house in London for Radio 4's schools programs. And our choir teacher was friends with a famous BBC producer called Douglas Coombs, who produced schools programming. And so I have quite a few Saturdays for a couple of years. We'd get paid 50 pence to go on a bus from St Albans down to BH and record shows called Singing Together and Time and Tune. And I've still got the. I actually bought some of the books off eBay the other day because I remember them so clearly. I would have been about 10. And I really wasn't interested in singing, but I was really interested in what was happening through the glass. So I remember very distinctly that I would often get on a Saturday afternoon and I'd go to Mrs. Luck, the choir teacher, and say, "Oh, Mrs. Luck, I'm not feeling very well." And she goes, "Oh, Clive, you're always not feeling very well on a Saturday afternoon. Well, why don't you go and sit in the control room, have a glass of water, and see how you feel in about 10 minutes. And that's all I wanted. I have no interest in being in front of the microphone, whether it was broadcasting, telling stories, or singing. I can't sing. And I wanted to see what was going on behind the glass. And then I sat there and looked at these engineers in the lower ground floor, BH, which is still our studio today, going, "This is where I need to be. I need to be here." And that was all I ever wanted. And it was such a young age. And then I was able to flex that at my local hospital radio station in St. Albans called City Radio, which was, you know, very exciting, effectively a social club with a closed-loop radio station attached to it. And then my local radio station, Chilton Radio, came on air in 1981. And I was the first caller on The Breakfast Show at 6:10 in the morning.
Wow.
And I won a Carole King record and an Earth, Wind & Fire vinyl. And I remember being very disappointed when the Carole King and Earth, Wind & Fire vinyl arrived. Now my kids think it's really cool. And then I went to school. And there was a children's program on the show station called Kid Stuff, presented by the legendary Pete Wagstaff. And I was first caller on the air at 4:08. And 11 years later, I was running the company, having been the first person on the radio station. So it was just very, very fortuitous, right time, right place, following a dream, getting lots of amazing people in my career who gave me a break, whether it was my choir teacher, whether it was Colin Mason and Phil Fothergill, whether it's Paul Robinson, and really, you know, you just show up, you show interest and ask how you can help, and it's amazing that I'm here 43 years later still.
Good for you. And in that 43 years, apart from the starting point, do you have a favourite station, a favourite moment? Was it Capital or Absolute or was it Jack FM? Or
it's, some of these stories I've never told before, and I don't particularly enjoy reminiscing, because my favourite thing in the career is the thing I'm going to do next.
I get it, yeah, for sure. But still, you must have something that you could tell us that was your favourite moment.
Oh, there are so many. So I think the best way to describe that is that we've got we're on a podcast with Radio Today. It's been a long gap between Radio Today podcasts, Roy and Stuart. Great to have you back. And we've got our own podcast. So we'll plug our own podcast. The show's called The Relentless Optimist. It's available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're up to 10 episodes and we've got another 10 in pre-production. And we've just actually been nominated in the British Podcast Awards, which is going to be at the O2 on October the 1st. And they are 19-minute podcasts that basically tell various different things in our careers that have inspired us or we've learned from. And actually, writing those and producing those and voicing those has been a real joy, because they are, whether they're 2 years ago or they're 22 years ago. And so they're all of my favorites. They, you know, so we'll have 20 stories by December, and they're all 20 minutes long, and they're all evergreen, so they're not news based. We design them as like marketing brochures. And somebody says to me, "Clive, I don't really understand what Meliora does." I send them 3 links and say, "When you're walking a dog on a Saturday, have a listen to these 3 podcasts. It could be about Absolute Radio, it could be about Capital, it could be about Shazam, it could be about the Women's World Cup in Australia." But they are the collective highlights of my career, and 10 of them are already published, or another 10 coming from October 1. And, you know, it's hard to pick your favourite child.
Finally, here we are sitting in Jakarta, in Indonesia, at Radio Days Asia. What do you make of this, of the place, of this event, of the business of radio in this part of the world?
So for the last 6 years, I've had the joy of working for a company called Singtel, which is the largest mobile company in, one of the largest in the world, has 750 million paying customers. You know, that's twice as many paying customers as Netflix. And as part of that amazing role I did for 6 years, I got to spend a lot of time in Southeast Asia and India, including here in Indonesia and Jakarta. So I love the city. It's an incredible place. There's 280 million people in Indonesia, 41.6 million people in the city of Jakarta, by far the biggest city in the world, and 55% of them are under 45. So this is the youngest city in the world as well. The vibrancy, the energy, the climate, the architecture, the can-do possibilities is amazing. So I love being here, and I'll be coming back frequently over the next couple of years.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for spending time with Radio Today. Clive Dickens, much appreciated.
Thanks, James. Good to see you again.
So we are here at Radio Days Asia in Jakarta. I'm joined by another familiar voice, radio futurologist James Cridland. James, what do you make of Jakarta?
It's definitely Jakarta. That's what I could say. No, it's a lovely place. It's been really good to be here at Radio Days Asia for the last couple of years. It's just such a different experience to Radio Days Europe. It's so different in terms of the types of people who are here, the types of people who we're hearing from, and it's been great. So yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
Now, you spend most of your time in Australia these days, but you're very familiar to UK radio. What is radio like in Asia, and how does it compare with the UK and Australia?
I think the big difference in Asia is that every single market is different. Every single market is, you know, you look at places like Singapore, for example, and it's tremendously advanced. It's very similar to the UK in many ways. In fact, there is a capital, 95.8 in Singapore, or there certainly used to be. But then you have a look into other places, and it's a very different experience. I found it interesting. I brought a radio with me, which I know is an unusual thing, but nevertheless. And I was tuning around to the FM dial here and found a radio station which is called Paddle Corner FM, which is all about a place in Jakarta where you can play paddle, and it's got a sauna, and it's got food, and it's just a radio station 24 hours a day. It's called Paddle Corner FM, and the only ad that it takes is an ad for the Paddle Corner here in Jakarta. And I thought, isn't that a really weird thing? That would never happen in the UK. That would never happen in Europe. But here we are, you know, the other side of the world, and people are using radio for all sorts of things, as well as, of course, the type of radio that you would expect. So yeah, no, it's always a fascinating place to end up coming to.
And for you as a futurologist, it must be interesting, because in some ways, new experiences is how we determine the future, isn't it?
Yes, and I love how you've fallen for the fact that I'm a futurologist. I always find these sorts of events really interesting, because the further you get away from the UK, for example, then the more different the ideas are, and you just see different things that are being talked about. Quite a lot of it is the same. Quite a lot of it is, you know, younger people aren't listening to radio as much as they perhaps used to, you know, those sorts of things. But then there are also quite a lot of differences, you know, in terms of how radio is in this part of the world, in places like Australia and so on and so forth. And so actually, coming here, you know, it's really interesting. You can kind of come here, grab some ideas, take them home, and you won't be copying anybody else in your market, because nobody else in the market is doing that sort of thing. So I think it's always a fun thing to do.
Now, you're going to be speaking at the Audio Festival in the UK at the beginning of October. What have you got planned for that?
I'm really looking forward to the festival, actually. It'll be the first time that I've spoken, which I'm quite looking
really?
Forward to. Yes, I'm quite looking forward to it. I used to be a trustee of the Academy, so it'll be nice to actually be on the stage. So I'm talking very much around the future of radio, what we need to do to look at the future, and part of that is there will be an old picture of Chris Moyles from 1993 that everybody can look forward to, but part of it is really showing what the difference is between radio then and radio now, and the need states that people have, why people are tuning in the first place, and what we should be doing about it. Because while radio itself hasn't necessarily changed that much as a technology, yes, we've got streaming and we've got DAB now, it hasn't really changed that much as a technology. The reason why people, though, are listening to the radio absolutely has changed 100%. And, you know, I mean, I had the lead singer of E17 on my show once. And that you know, that getting closer to the stars was what radio was all about. Now, if you want to get closer to the stars, for example, it's TikTok, it's Instagram, it's all of these weird and wonderful places, rather than radio. And there are examples across the board there. And I sometimes wonder whether or not we've fully understood that in terms of the big changes of why people are listening to radio now in comparison to why they were listening to radio 30-something years ago.
I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, the squeeze between radio and podcast, but you're very much also a big foot in the podcast world. Are the two the same thing now, or are they still separate?
I think there's a lot of similarities. I think if you were talking to people in podcasting 10 years ago, they would have been very angry at hearing that there were similarities between podcasting and radio. But I think there is now much more understanding that a great, you know, great audio is great audio wherever it actually is. And so I think that there's certainly similarities. And part of that is the people. Part of that is making sure that human beings are put there at, you know, in the number one space. The big difference, though, and the thing which is really freeing, actually, in terms of the difference, is that when you look at radio, you have to be pretty, you know, you have to be for everybody, really. You have to be broadcasting. I mean, that's the whole point of the phrase. With podcasts, although there are some broad podcasts, most of them are much more narrow and much more niche. And that's something you can't really get away with in terms of certainly FM radio and to an extent DAB as well. As one example, there is a podcast that works incredibly well in the US. It earns millions and millions of dollars a year, and it's a podcast for air conditioning installers.
Wow.
And the guy who's run it has timed the podcast to be the average length between a job if you're an air conditioning installer, because obviously that then you can listen to the entire show, which is A, very clever, and B, you know, I mean, obvious, but so clever. So that's the first thing. But also, he's really the only podcast out there for air conditioning installers. So guess who all of the air conditioning installer companies, yeah, guess who the air conditioning installer companies want to be advertising to? You know, anybody that makes anything for those people, they're there on that particular show. And I think that's a real key difference between broadcast radio, trying to reach as many people in our town or city as possible, and the way that podcasting can still do communities, but communities of common interest rather than communities of locality.
And some people thought that fixed radio was niche.
Yes, fixed radio, or there was a Polish radio station on DAB as well when I was in London. You know, those sorts of things are one thing, yeah, but as you say, you know, some of the niche shows available on podcasts, and there are over 7.5 million of them, you know, some of the niche shows available there are quite something else.
It's always great to come to these kind of events, because it does give us a bit of a foresight into what other people are doing and what's going to go on in the future. And, you know, you're one of the people that obviously, as we've said, talks about the future quite a lot. But we're also asking people about, how did you get into it to start with? What was your first experience, James, in radio? How did you get into the radio world?
I was telling Clive Dickens, who I know that we've just heard from, but I was telling Clive Dickens how I got into radio. I was in boarding school. And that boarding school was quite lucky, because it was in a valley. And so therefore, if you had a illegal FM broadcaster, transmitter, then it didn't reach anywhere further than the school, which was very handy for me. for the first radio station I worked for was mine. I kind of got the bug from that, but I also got the bug from Signal Radio, which opened up in Stoke-on-Trent, where I lived, and all of a sudden there was a radio station for me. There hadn't been a radio station for me in the past that I felt was my radio station, and to have that club, to have that sense of belonging, was really important. And there was a brilliant broadcaster in the evening. I'm sure that many radio today listeners will remember him, Colin Cook, who used to be on Piccadilly and did a show on Signal for a long time, CC on the AM and the FM in the PM. Very good. But he was brilliant, and he did such a good job. And one of the things that he did is he gave all of his audience a silly nickname, and we used that nickname all the time when we were taking part in the show. And so you really did feel as if you were part of a club, you know, and you would have a call from, you know, now here's Madonna's handbag and, you know, curiosity killed the cat's hat, and all this kind of stuff. It was a really interesting thing, and it just completely opened me up to what you can get from, you know, from audio and what you can get from radio. Yeah.
And a few years later, you were interviewing the lead singer of E17.
Yes. Actually, I interviewed him in the bath.
Okay.
Or was that Bad Boys Inc.? I can't remember. Ah,
and who were you working for then?
I was on The Pulse, radio station in Bradford. So good they closed it down.
Well, James, thanks very much, and you know, I look forward to hearing from you at the Audio Festival October 1st, right?
October the 1st, yes. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
James Gridland, thank you. We're here at Radio Days Asia, a little bit quieter in here, and I've managed to corner Rachel Questa, who is supervising producer for The Daily, which is the New York Times' big podcast. Rachel's based in Washington, D.C. Rachel, welcome to Jakarta. How has Radio Days Asia been for you?
Thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely wonderful. I have met so many people. I have learned so many things, and I have really, really enjoyed my time.
Now, obviously, the Daily is one of the most highly respected podcasts from around the world, particularly in the world of topical news. You know, it's one of the New York Times' biggest products, I think, in this area. Tell us a bit more about The Daily. It's been going since 2017 now. It's a well-established podcast, isn't it? It really is.
It is. And every time I say that it's been around for almost a decade, I sort of can't believe it. So yes, The Daily launched in February of 2017. And it launched after the first election of President Donald Trump, just to sort of help make sense of the news and American politics. Our initial mission statement was, "This moment demands an explanation." And that's been our defining mission and goal in all of the years since, no matter what the story is, no matter what the moment is. And so our goal is to bring the best of New York Times journalism to meet the moment of the news, and to explain for people how we got to this moment in time in the news cycle, why it matters, the context, all of that. And so that's our mission day in and day out, 5 days a week.
And it's changed quite a bit, though, hasn't it, since those early days? I attended a session that you did here at the event, and you talked about it being a sort of fairly chaotic podcast to start with.
It was. I mean, just that we were following the news cycle, and the news cycle in the early days, there was constant news every single day. And so we were trying to keep up. We were trying to meet that mission. We felt a real responsibility to our audience to sort of explain the moment and to lean into that New York Times reporting and journalism and sort of help cut through the noise of all of the news. And so we still have our moments of a lot of news that sort of doesn't let up. But I think now we're at this place where I sort of described, you know, the question that we were always asking is, what just happened? And we still ask that question, but in many ways, we're in this place of having been around for almost a decade, we're telling sort of the same story, or it's this ongoing story, I guess. And so the question we often ask ourselves now is, what just happened, and how does it fit into our understanding and the coverage that we have done on this topic previously? And what does this new chapter tell us? How does it advance or change our understanding of the story? So I think in chaos, the question that you're asking is, what just happened? But now, as a show that's been around for 10 years, we have to advance that question and think about it in terms of coverage and cohesive coverage, and how do we build on that, and how do we sort of meet the moment now as compared to before.
Certainly the Trump administration gives you plenty of material to work with, I'm sure. And it must be a bigger question is how to decide what to do on what day.
It's a great question, and it's a question that we have, that we talk about as a team every morning, because it's so important for us and we want to feel aligned editorially. And so I think the moment often reveals itself. Honestly, we consider ourselves the front page, the audio version of the front page of the New York Times. And so in many ways, I think that the news sort of just dictates it. But it is a conversation that we have to have every morning. And I think for us, the question that we're asking is, are we meeting our mission? And are we, if there's a breaking news headline that comes across people's phones, they get these alerts, are we jumping in to explain that? And if not, why aren't we? Is it because it's a story that we've covered extensively and we don't necessarily have to devote an entire episode to covering it again? But it's a question that we have to think about constantly, even beyond the in the morning. If news happens in the afternoon, we have to be ready to pivot sort of at any moment.
The style is definitely to bring in somebody who's an expert on that particular aspect of that news story. And that's something that really, I guess, drives it. So is the availability of that person or that reporter, I guess that's key.
Yes, it is. And we are incredibly lucky to be part of an organization that sees the value of the Daily and wants New York Times journalism in the form of the Daily. I mean, we're all part of one organization, but I think the New York Times really values the fact that the biggest story of the day, that reporter can be the lead byline of the paper and they can be on the Daily. And so the Times makes it happen, and that's how we get to do our jobs with the Daily, because you want to be able to have that byline explaining this story that they just broke or that they just reported out. And that's really exciting for us, and it's essential for doing our jobs.
We talked a little bit about how when you started out with the Daily, it was a little bit chaotic, perhaps in presentation style and mix of stories and so on. But now in some ways it's the opposite, because it's almost seen as a kind of oasis of calm in the way that it's presented. Your lead presenter, Michael Barbaro, it has that particular kind of style, but you also use music within the story and you also use the art of the pause. Tell us about what goes into that thinking around that.
Absolutely. You know, it was really interesting hearing from other podcasters here talking about the pause. And it's true, we do not edit out pauses because they're human, they're real. My favorite piece of audio is someone sighing and pausing, because I think it's incredibly revealing and that they're having this moment of thinking. And so we don't edit out those pauses. Those stay. So those are very natural. And then just in terms of music or a hmm from one of our hosts, sometimes it just kind of helps let the point sink in for a moment, because we don't want to be in a position where an idea or an explanation is running so quickly by someone that they sort of miss it. And so for us, it's a little bit of just thinking about, okay, can we just add a beat of music here or something, so it just gives your ear just a tiny bit of time to let that point really land.
I mean, it is interesting, isn't it, about the art of editing an interview. And, you know, sometimes I've heard interviews recently where people, they want to keep the pace up of the interview and the person is speaking quite slowly. So they'll literally cut out almost every gap between every word. And then it turns the voice into something that is very staccato, and it doesn't really work anymore. So I guess that's what you're going back against.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think it's the art of the podcast is the natural conversation. And so I think that that is what we try to really embody and emphasize, is that this is a natural conversation happening in real time about the news or about some sort of subject and humanity. I mean, that's a big part of the Daily too, is the humanity of New York Times journalists, of the people that we're talking to. And so we don't want to strip that out.
You have favorite episodes, favorite interviewees? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but, you know, there's so many subjects and interviews that you guys have done. Will something come to mind?
That's a great question. I mean, so much of my work now really focuses on Washington and politics and elections, but there was a point in time when I sort of was more of a generalist. And so there are two things that come to mind, one politics, one non-politics. The non-politics one was when we did a series of stories about the innovation of using Ancestry and people submitting their DNA and things like that in order to catch serial killers in the United States. And so that's how the authorities caught the Golden State Killer.
Right.
And so it was an interview with a detective who initially tried this out. And then we did this series of stories about that. And that was just such an interesting way it was just an interesting story, and it wasn't necessarily like the breaking news of the day, but that was really exciting. And then maybe one a little bit sort of politics or news related was when the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, and President Biden had said that the Afghan troops were sort of laying down their arms, and the Taliban just was able to quickly come in. And I had this question of, well, if you're part of the Afghan army, what's your sort of perspective on what happened? And I was able to find an Afghan general who was willing to talk to us
and
shared his whole story of growing up under the Taliban and fighting with the United States and sort of his perspective. And so I point to those two because I think they show sort of the variety of the daily, that we can go from DNA to an Afghan general to breaking news. And that's what we're trying to do, is just be useful and sort of explain this world around us.
And how did you end up at the Daily? You know, what was your intro into the news business, into the audio business?
Yes, so I started out as an intern at National Public Radio. And so through that, I was introduced to the bureau chief of the Scripps Washington Bureau. So Scripps was predominantly a newspaper company in the United States, and then they expanded to TV and radio. And then this is as podcasts were sort of starting to boom in the United States because of Serial. And so I got a job producing a weekly politics podcast with Scripps called Decode DC.
Right.
And then I went back to NPR, and my last day at Scripps was President Trump's inauguration day for the first term. And then the following Monday, I was back at NPR helping to produce their politics podcast. And then the Daily launched, and I clicked play, and I said, I want to make that. And luckily, I applied, and they wanted me to make it with them, and here I am.
Right.
So it was a journey, but it was wonderful. Now I've been with the Daily almost basically 9.5 years, almost a decade.
And now a supervising producer, which is quite something. Yeah, no, absolutely. And Jakarta's been good for you, Radio Days Asia?
Oh, it's been wonderful. I've really, really enjoyed it. Mm.
Well, Rachel Questar, thank you very much for talking to us on the Radio Today podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.